This is Sound and Vision from KEXP. News about artists battling with record labels to reclaim their master or original recordings of their songs has come to the forefront in recent years. But it's not just big-name artists making those moves. KEXP's Mira Powell has a story on musicians from smaller record labels who are pushing to get back their masters.
Whether you're a fan or not, Taylor Swift continues to dominate headlines.
Taylor Swift.
Her fans are called Swifties.
And regardless of your thoughts about the artist, she's made recent moves within the music business that have empowered artists in big ways. Swift began releasing re-recorded versions of her previous albums back in 2021, starting with her 2008 sophomore album, Fearless. She wanted to reclaim her music after her previous label, Big Machine Records, along with her master recordings, were sold to record executive Scott, aka Scooter Braun, who Swift, in her own words, has described as a bully. In owning her master recordings, Braun has a lot of control over how Swift's music can be used. For example, if a company wanted to use a song from the original version of Fearless in a commercial, they'd have to get permission not only from Swift, but Braun too. And Braun would get a share of those royalties. And in general, Braun makes money off of streams, downloads, and other purchases of Swift's music that he owns. Swift wasn't having that, so she sidestepped Braun completely and began re-recording those old albums from scratch so that she would own those new masters in their entirety. Now Swift has re-released 4 out of the 6 albums she had originally put out through Big Machine Records, with many of those new Taylor's versions outselling and outstreaming the originals.
In a funny sort of way, she's sort of indie.
Chad Clark is a singer and founder of the Washington, D.C. band Beauty Pill. It's not beliefs and distance.
It's not generable. I mean, you know, it's weird to talk about a billionaire this way. But yeah, I mean, I love that Taylor Swift has made this conversation happen on the level that she has.
Maybe not on the same global stage as Taylor Swift, but Clark and Beauty Pill also dealt with record label issues that led to the band wanting to reclaim its original recordings. Just last year, Beauty Pill re-released their 2015 album, Beauty Pill Describes Things As They Are, on Clark's own label, Findings. Casinos got no clocks or windows, and it works out in the end. Most people have the muscles in their eyes. But Clark says it was extremely difficult to get there. To release that 2015 album, Beauty Pill had signed with a small one-person label in New York, which now no longer exists.
I'm actually trying really hard not to make this an emotional whole thing, but it was just a mess. The whole release was just a mess. It was completely botched.
There were disagreements between the band and the label over ownership of the album, and Clark says the band never got any royalties or any sort of accounting numbers from the label at all, which he says was an obvious breach of contract on the label's part. To this day, Clark says he doesn't even know how much the record actually sold. The band was prepared to sue, but eventually Beauty Pill reached a settlement agreement with the label, recapturing the rights to their album, Describes Things As They Are. But why do bands and artists have to sign away the rights to their music in the first place?
Most larger record labels, so everything from your bigger indies to any of the majors, are going to often require ownership of the masters as part of a typical label deal for most musicians.
Jeff Nelson is an intellectual property and music attorney at his law firm in Seattle, Skyhop Law. Nelson works with a lot of up-and-coming musicians who might be looking into signing with labels. He says many artists, particularly smaller artists, often have less leverage to own their music when signing with a label.
And so in some cases, it's not a question of whether you can own them when you sign, it's whether you're willing to sign and give up that control.
But that loss of control does come with benefits, including
an advance of some sort and a recording budget and their distribution network and access to their marketing channels that you may not have without the label.
Nelson says contracts with labels can vary widely. Sometimes labels might only own a musician's master recordings as long as their contract lasts, say 10 years. Then the artist gets their masters back, free to sign another contract or move on to working with another label. Sometimes record deals include a stipulation in which artists must buy back their masters with some agreed-upon amount or maybe a factor of how much revenue the release has generated. Other times, a label's ownership of an artist's master recordings is more permanent. Like in the case of Los Angeles duo Deep Valley, made up of musicians Lindsay Troy and Julie Edwards. Their 2013 album, Sistrionics, was released by Island UK, a major record label currently owned by the even larger Universal Music Group. When the 10-year anniversary of that record rolled around, Edwards was a mother of two young kids, and Troy was pregnant with her second child. Because of their growing families, they decided to dig into the finances of their past records. Here's Edwards.
I started looking into Sistrionics, which, you know, arguably you could say was our most successful record. And what I realized is that we've actually never made a cent from streams, downloads, or physical sales of that record.
Edwards says that's because the band had not made the agreed upon amount of money in their record contract to start seeing that cash flow to them.
So then I was like, well, that's cool. Maybe our masters will revert to us at some point.
Edwards started digging into the old contract, hoping to find the period of time in which the band would be able to reclaim their master recordings from the label.
And I like dug through this 60-page contract of like dense legalese and literally could not find the term anywhere. I finally had to actually search the word perpetuity. I was like, what if I search this word? What will I find? So I just did like a word search of the word perpetuity, and I found the word in the contract once and realized that they owned the masters until we die and beyond then.
Edwards says she tried to negotiate with the label to no avail. The label wouldn't budge. The contract was set in stone.
And so I realized that what we had to do, if we ever wanted Sistrionics to be financially meaningful for us, was to re-record it and have our own masters of it.
So Deep Valley went back into the studio to re-record the album they had made 10 years earlier, and Sistrionics 2.0 was born. Edwards was maybe more eager to take on the re-recording project, as Lindsay Troy, who sings and plays guitar in the band, was 8 months pregnant at the time. Here's Troy and Edwards.
It was like basically almost my due date, and then Julie was like, kept texting me every day, like, can you get back in the studio? And
I would literally be like, Lindsay, are you having a baby today, or can you come into the studio?
And I'm like, I think I'm going into labor, so probably not.
Troy did have her baby in the midst of re-recording the album. Sistrionics 2.0 officially came out in February, and Deep Valley have been getting money back in their pockets from streams, downloads, and physical sales of the record. When all was said and done, it cost the duo $15,000 to re-record their record, mix it, master it, and distribute it. They estimate that the original version of the record cost the label about $50,000. So re-recording the record cost a lot less than trying to buy back their masters and debt they racked up with their previous label. Although it was a lot of work to get there, both women say they're happy with the end result and with having the freedom to make the album how they wanted, without any outside influences. When Deep Valley initially signed to that major label to release Sistrionics, both Edwards and Troy say they felt like the band's label and management had a specific vision for the album, which came through in how it was mastered and which songs made the cut. Here's Troy.
Where it started to get a little funky was when the label started meddling with, like, the mixing at the end. Like, they were just kind of obsessively trying to figure out what was going to be this perfect formula to make us into this mainstream success.
Edwards says Sistrionics 2.0 let the two women do things their own way.
The whole neurotic process that had been applied to the first record with all these like cooks in the kitchen wanting it to be a certain thing, like the Destiny's Child of rock and roll or whatever, and us like trying to be that and trying to make the record that, whatever that meant. And so the beauty of 2.0 was taking that out, like just get her done, make her heavy, let her be raw. That's what it was all about.
Although Chad Clark and Beauty Pill didn't re-record their album, he says he felt a similar joy in re-releasing Describes Things As They Are on his own label.
So now I own Describes Things As They Are. In practical terms, this means money. Beauty Pill captures all of the revenue from every sale, where once we got no revenue from any sale.
Beauty Pill Describes Things As They Are was met with widespread acclaim when it came out in 2015, landing on a number of best album lists, including Time Magazine's 10 Best Albums of the 2010s. Stethoscope on my chest. He says we better do this fast. this album meant a lot to Clark. It was written after Clark was recovering from serious health issues at the time. He had a viral infection that entered his heart, which nearly killed him. And the album was recorded as part of a public art exhibit at an Arlington, Virginia museum where people could drop in and watch the band as they worked. So Clark's glad to have gotten to this point now, finally able to claim the album as the band's own many years later.
I'm literally feeling this feeling of euphoria, like physical euphoria, just because I control the work now, and there's more dignity in that, you know? I'm not saying that I would never work with another label again. I probably will. But I do really love that I, as an artist, that I don't have to answer to anyone else's directives about how to present or how to sell or, you know, what we do artistically. It's very liberating.
Although for Clark and the women of Deep Valley, working with the label was somewhat of a battle, it's not always that way.
It's hopefully a partnership.
Grant McCallum spent more than two decades working at record labels. He most recently worked at Seattle's Barsook Records, a label that's put out albums by Death Cab for Cutie, Not a Surf, and Fantagram. Before that, he worked at Sub Pop Records. He currently manages Seattle band Thunder Pussy. McCallum says labels rely on master rights as a steady stream of revenue.
Running a label involves investing in talent, and you never know what's going to take off and what's not going to take off. And the ability to continue investing in talent means the ability to have a steady revenue source from masters that you currently have the rights to. Basically, the ability to keep making money off records that did well to invest in artists. Some of them are going to do great, some of them aren't. And you need that steady revenue stream to continue investing in the next group of artists you want to work with.
For many artists, signing over music rights might be unavoidable, especially with the draw of funding and promotion offered by a record label. But there's still room for caution. Attorney Jeff Nelson says there are volunteer legal services for artists in Washington, California, and a number of other states.
So even if you don't think you can afford a lawyer, there are options out there to get free legal advice, just to get some input on the contract, what the concerns might be, or what the big risks or red flags are. Because a lot of artists will just see the advance, sign the contract without knowing what they're getting into. And that is where things can get really difficult.
Edwards and Troy of Deep Valley and Clark of Beauty Pill all have similar advice for artists dealing with record deals. Trust your gut.
All you have is your gut. And at least if you do your gut, you can, at the end of the day, you can say, I failed and it's my fault because I went with my gut, but at least I got to go with it.
For Sound and Vision, I'm Mira Powell.
That was Sound and Vision, and this feed is about to change a little bit starting in early April. We'll have more details on that coming up next week on this feed. But meanwhile, if you like what you hear on this show, please let us know. You can email us at soundandvision@kexp.org, or you can spread word about this show by subscribing to this podcast, rating it, and reviewing it. KEXP is a publicly funded station. We rely on listener support to do what we do, so you can help financially support this show with a one-time $20 donation at kexp.org/sound. Thanks for listening.